Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week, our hosts venture off to the cinema and return with their insightful reviews on The Social Network and Freakonomics. And now, without further ado, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Phil.
Hello, I'm Mr. Phil.
And I'm Mr. Movie. And for our first review, Mr. Film, it's finally here, the movie everyone's been waiting for, The Social Network.
All right.
Something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles. I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
The site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind. It's moving faster
what
than any of us ever imagined.
Get left
went
behind.
Let's sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and watch you write as a check.
If you guys were the inventors of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Do you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
This is our time.
You're being accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Jesse Eisenberg plays Mark Zuckerberg, the young Facebook founder and now CEO worth billions of dollars. The picture deals with Facebook's beginnings that left some involved feeling a bit cheated and taken advantage of. The PG-13 two-hour movie from Columbia Pictures hip-hops along at a brisk pace, thanks largely to Aaron Sorkin's script, based on the book The Accidental Billionaires by Ben Mezrick. The dialogue here is quick, typical of Sorkin, but it works well in portraying Zuckerberg as a fast-talking, self-absorbed computer programming whiz and, well, a bit of a jerk. Much of the story is told in depositions and flashbacks, where Zuckerberg and his friends turn foes, battle it out over several lawsuits brought against him. One involves identical twins Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who claim Zuckerberg stole their idea for Facebook. And another involves a lawsuit between Zuckerberg and his best friend, Facebook co-founder Eduardo Saverin, played by Never Let Me Go's Andrew Garfield, who is suing him for $600 million. All that said, this movie isn't about money. It's about relationships between friends and business partners and how these can go sour. And what's most interesting to me about this movie is that each character has real value to offer, but also has a flaw that gets in the way of achieving those values. Though difficult to pull off in a motion picture, the classic conflict of man versus himself is well dramatized. For example, Zuckerberg has the creative vision and is a programming whiz, but comes across as a self-absorbed, insensitive jerk. Co-founder Eduardo is portrayed as an honest kid who gets taken advantage of, but perhaps lacks the vision to see the real value of his company. The identical twins' claim that Zuckerberg stole the Facebook idea seems like it may have merit, but they also come across as whiny jocks who, in the end, don't have what it takes to create a winning team. What we see on the screen will definitely spark good discussions about who was ethical and who was not, who was worthy and who wasn't, and how much and what part of this was about money, or proving something to the world, or even trying to tear it down. I like this movie. Writer Sorkin gets big kudos from me for his achievement here, and the directing and acting are also uniformly good. But I've been teeter-tottering here between an A- and a B+. Because in the end, I'm not really sure what the movie's trying to say. Perhaps it's trying to say too much. Or maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe it's just trying to say that a guy who created something phenomenal made a few mistakes that he may or may not regret, and now has to pay the price for them. But there's a little bit of a so-what factor in that, I think. We've all made mistakes in our lives, but it isn't the focal point of who we are. We do pay the price, but we also learn from them and grow and move on. In the end, I think, we will also decide to move on from The Social Network, but not be sorry we experience it either. Mr. Film, I'm going to settle with a very strong B+ on this one.
Well, I think you hit on a couple of points here, and I think what really makes this picture work is the fact that Aaron Sorkin doesn't really focus on the complicated, contentious intellectual property lawsuit, just turn it into this kid sniveling at each other. He finds the universal story and essentially makes and wrote a modern-day Greek tragedy about a brilliant but flawed man who serves his society and creates one, actually, and destroys himself, his own social network, and his own dreams in the process. Really, that is what makes this picture interesting, is that there is that universality, that Sorkin finds universality in the Facebook story. Now, I also think the film is also about class, and I think that's Fincher's, kind of his contribution here, and how one man probably has changed class forever in America, because it's gone from now this traditional club-based, face-to-face business that we see in early in the Social Network, when these a big part of the picture is Eduardo and Zuckerberg's desire to join these final clubs at Harvard, which are some sort of fraternities, I guess. And now it's about technology. It's your access to technology, who you know, who you can friend, how you build those social webs and those social networks. And I think this is really also where the film resonates for me, and from that pop culture part of the picture. It's really fascinating to think that we can actually pinpoint and dramatize the moments in which we see this transition occur. Now, one thing I want everyone to remember, and there's been actually some criticism of the picture in other media about this, that you know, this, a lot of it's been made up. Mark Zuckerberg has said, "This isn't, you know, my life isn't that interesting." Just remember, this is a docudrama. It's not a documentary. It's a Greek tragedy. Sorkin and Fincher do play probably fast and loose with some of the facts. That doesn't bother me because of the universal story that we're looking at. Now, I think another interesting point as well is that from a filmmaking perspective, the picture itself is revolutionary. Now, no one will probably really know that going in, but from an industry perspective, it's a very interesting picture because it was shot with a new type of camera, and they did some very interesting techniques in the post-production, which is really could change the way pictures are made. And I think that it's going to be very exciting for the kind of stories that filmmakers will be able to tell. So I think we're witnessing a story about a revolution and witnessing a different kind of revolution at the same time, another technological revolution.
And it's interesting now, that they're doing this in a pretty straightforward story. Like, for example,
I think that's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah.
Because they use some of this technology in, you know, Avatar and some of these other big pictures.
But in this, you don't know there's any special effects going on at all.
No, you don't. Yeah. And actually, most of the special effects are. Well, as a matter of fact, the actor who played the Winklevoss is one actor, and they used technology to seamlessly integrate his face onto a stand-in.
Well, I think there were two actors, right? But they basically morphed.
Yeah, there's two actors, right. But one that's the face of only one actor. So he actually played both parts. And that's what I think is really exciting about it, is the fact that they took a very straightforward picture. This is probably the most straightforward picture David Fincher, for sure, has ever made. He's, you know, made Fight Club, Benjamin Button, et cetera, these kind of high concept pictures. And this is a much quieter and more interesting picture. And I really think that Fincher did a fabulous job here. I think that the strength of the picture from a filmmaking perspective for me are those little moments, those aha moments when Mark figures out a new Facebook feature or Eduardo realizes that they're really onto something, you know, they have groupies and that something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the last shot, which I don't want to give away. I think Fincher really knows how to serve the story here. He lingers when he should. He paces the story. He allows it to unfold. And, you know, when I've talked about in the leisurely, these things I like with these leisurely, more leisurely paced stories, this is an example, I think, of what that looks like. And it does have, you know, that crisp dialogue, which I think helps propel the picture. Now, I agree with you. The entire cast is uniformly excellent. And it's saying a lot that Justin Timberlake, as Sean Parker, is the weakest member of the cast, and he is really good. So this just, if you love acting, I think this is a picture to really go see. And Jesse Eisenberg, I think he basically can write his own ticket after this stellar performance. If he doesn't at least get buzzed for a Best Actor nomination, I'll be very surprised. Now, my biggest criticism of the picture, though, is that courtroom deposition stuff. I found some of the transitions on that a little jarring at times, even though there are those revelatory moments that are kind of interesting. And it did break some of the tension as to whether Mark would betray Eduardo. Now, it's no spoiler. You talked about it in your review of Mr. Movie, that Eduardo is suing Mark at the beginning of the picture. But that's also maybe what makes it a tragedy. We know that they will inevitably reach this point, and watching it unfold, it's just that much more painful. Undoubtedly, this is probably one of the best pictures of the year. And it's certainly the best written and the best directed one. But I agree with you about the so what factor. I really wonder, even with the universal theme, if the film will hold up over time. If we will look back at this 20 years from now and say, interesting, well acted, well produced, but okay, I don't know if we'll see those universal themes. And because of this trepidation, I'm going to give it an A-.
I think that's fair. I don't totally agree with you about the courtroom depositions. I'm kind of a geek when it comes to those, so I sort of inherently like those anyway, so I have a bit of a bias there. But I like that aspect of the movie. Justin Timberlake as Sean Parker is pretty good, but I agree he's the weakest person in this. But he's also really the baddest person in this in terms of morality and whatnot.
Now,
Sean Parker, if you don't know, was the creator, I believe, of Napster. And he really is kind of that, we're going to tear it down, we're going to stick it to the man, we're going to screw, you know, the music industry. And it's interesting, his relationship with Zuckerberg. I didn't know that he had a stake in Facebook at all. And so that was an interesting thing for me to learn in this movie. And I wonder, like, what his influence had on Zuckerberg in terms of some of the morally questionable actions that he took. And that was an interesting thing that played out for me. If you're interested in learning more about that, there's a really good book called Appetite for Self-Destruction about the whole coming down of the music industry and a lot of the mistakes that they made. And they touch a lot on Sean Parker in that.
Yeah, he definitely does. He is definitely the heavy in the picture. If there is a heavy, he definitely is that. And again, that also makes Mark Zuckerberg, that relationship also is, I think, makes the Zuckerberg character very interesting, because he is this tragic, ultimately is a tragic hero. And it is interesting to note that you mentioned that in the your review that Zuckerberg comes off as a jerk. And what I think was interesting is that Sorkin himself actually likes Zuckerberg. He never had any interaction with him, but he likes him, finds him interesting or likes him as a human being. He stated that in a few interviews. So I think that going in, if you know that, I think it also makes a more interesting picture, because it has this flawed, tragic hero aspect to it that I think, again, gives it that more universal theme beyond the fact that it's about this story about this technological piece of software that we all use to communicate with each other.
Yeah, and I don't think it really does portray Zuckerberg as a, you know, as a bad guy or anything like that.
Not really.
I mean, there's been a lot of press about
they
have to do spin control. I don't think they need to do anything here. In fact, I think some of the things that the real life Zuckerberg is doing, such as his $100 million donation to some public school somewhere, is more embarrassing and more sort of apologetic than what comes across in this movie. So yeah. I think they have to do some more spin for the real life Zuckerberg and not from this movie. Because I think, although he does make mistakes, like we talked about, we understand that he's young and that the stakes are really, really high because of the great value that they're creating. But it's also the fact that he is really the creator of a lot of this great value. And so, I think he gets credit for that. And I think, I don't think he comes across as really the bad guy. He's like, well, he created some great value and he had some good ideas. Maybe he did some morally questionable things, but I think he's learned from them. And I don't think he comes across as a bad guy.
No, I don't think so. And particularly at the end, you know, there's this, I don't want to give anything away. And there's a very subtle shift at the very end, which I think is pretty interesting. What I also find fascinating about this picture is just the obsession with class and building these social, you know, being part of a society. And that's something Fincher's, of course, touched on with things like Fight Club in particular, being the most obvious and kind of off the wall sort of picture in that regard. And I think that's the other more, to me, in some cases, more, almost more interesting aspect of it, how class still is such an important part of what it means to live in our society, in any society, and how so much of the way they portray the development of Facebook is really a reaction to someone who wants to get into this, you know, this, you know, kind of the upper echelon of his society, this exclusive place, and how Facebook was all about exclusivity in the beginning, and again, that access to technology. So I think there's a lot of really interesting points that they talk about. I think it's a great picture if you're going to go out on a date or out with some friends. I think this would be a great thing to go see before you go eat your meal. I think you'll be talking about this and some of the implications for days to come. So I think there's a lot of fodder here. And I think that's what really makes it, if not a great movie, at least a really good movie, because there is more, you know, there are more levels to it that you can talk about after you walk out of that theater.
Definitely. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Movie Film Show Audience Participation Game called the Movie Film Show Audience Participation Game. This week, Mr. Movie, me, and you, Mr. Film, will compete for who possesses the most obscure picture in our respective libraries. Listen and vote for who you think has the best pitch in this category. Just email your vote to mail@moviefilmshow.com after you've heard both pitches. Mr. Film, you're up first.
Well, I actually put a little different spin on this as well. I also went for the season, since we are entering the Halloween season. And I picked Bubba Ho-Tep as my obscure movie. It stars Bruce Campbell and the late, great Ozzie Davis. Its premise is as ingenious as it is weird. Elvis didn't die on a toilet in 1977. In fact, I don't know if you knew this, Mr. Movie, he ended up in an old age home with JFK, played by Ozzie Davis, in Texas, where he has to fight an ancient evil, a reincarnated Egyptian mummy. Now, the film is weird, wonderful, and Campbell is at once campy, engaging, and heroic, and probably one of the best Elvises, or Elvi, I guess, who's ever been on screen. So vote for me, Mr. Film. Just email the phrase Bubba to mail@moviefilmshow.com and let Mr. Movie know that you think my film is the most obscure.
Well, that's a pretty good pick. Hard to compete with, Mr. Film, but I may have you beat.
Okay, try it.
Now, I know Bubba Ho-Tep made a little over $1 million at the box office, so it might not be as obscure as you think. My movie didn't make anything at the box office.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's called The Irony of Fate or Enjoy Your Bath. Our Russian listeners probably know this movie well. It's a made-for-TV romantic comedy from 1975 that takes place over New Year's Eve and is set in communist Russia. And I'm told it's played every New Year's Eve on television in Russia. Now, this is an obscure and funny romantic comedy that could only be told in the USSR. On New Year's Eve, a group of friends gets a little too drunk. The next morning, one of them has to get on a plane and return home in a different city. But they can't remember who it is who has to get on the plane. The wrong guy, of course, does get on the plane, and when he awakens from his drunken stupor, he's in a completely different city. But thanks to central planning in communist Russia, the new city is laid out exactly like his hometown, down to the street names, the street addresses, and yes, even the key to his front door works in this apartment. So when he wakes up, it's really in this young woman's apartment, and the comedy about whose apartment it really is starts to play out. This is a really funny premise and well worth taking a look at. Now, I do own this movie. You can buy it on Amazon. And if you're from Russia, you'll probably vote for Mr. Film's movie. But I'm banking that most of our audience have never heard of it and will like my choice better. So vote for me, Mr. Movie. Just email the phrase, enjoy your bath, to mail@moviefilmshow.com. We will tally your votes and announce the winner on our next show. All right. You still there, Mr. Film?
I'm still here, and I don't know. I think he found a loophole.
It is a movie. It's a feature-length movie.
All right. And if you think that Mr. Movie cheated, right, cheated to move, to mail at moviefilmshow.com.
Oh, all right.
Are we doing Freakonomics?
Yes, we are. That's our next review, Freakonomics, and I have here in our notes that you are reviewing it first.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Okay.
Take it away.
All right. Now, our next film is Freakonomics, and contrary to what most people think, the economy is not really transparent. In fact, much of what really drives it is hidden, or at least that's the theory of our next picture.
My entire academic life has been devoted to figuring out tricky ways to get at causality. We kind of say, what if this thing that everybody thinks is so really isn't so? The closest thing to worldview in Freakonomics is that incentives matter. And if you can figure out what people's incentives are, you have a good chance of guessing how they're going to behave. I don't have to ever have seen a sumo match. I can go in the data and I can tell you that there was rampant cheating going on.
We have a crime problem that is out of control.
Clear the numbers are dropping. What's not clear is why.
Total BS, wasn't it?
In the Magnolia Pictures film adaptation of the bestseller Freakonomics, five filmmakers set out to show how the way we name our children doom or guarantee their future success. If we have an incentive to cheat, we will. The reasons why the crime rate fell had little to do with get-tough tactics. And if we incentivize our kids with cold, hard cash, surprise, surprise, they'll do better in school. While the PG-13 Freakonomics is generally enjoyable and slickly presented, it reminds me of one of those old Connections TV shows where the host would trace how chewing gum and a paperclip led directly to the development of the atom bomb. Interesting, but sometimes a little spurious. I really didn't mind the 90-minute ride when I was on it and believe that Freakonomics author Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner, who appear in the film, make a few interesting points, particularly about how if you can find out what is an incentive for individuals, you can predict their behavior. Now, for me, the opening sequence about the incentive for a real estate agent to accept a bid on a house that's $10,000 less than the asking price was probably the most interesting part of the whole picture. Fundamentally, this is just economics presented as pop psychology and stand-up. I enjoyed the show, but I can't really say I learned much from it. So just from the an enjoyment factor, I'm giving this a B-.
Well, I think you make excellent points in this, but I think B- is a little too kind.
Really?
This thing props itself up as a sort of Mythbusters for intellectuals. And what could have been an interesting dive into epistemology, which is the branch of philosophy that talks about how we know what we know, it doesn't really work, and it doesn't really prove its theme. There are a couple of things that it does illustrate well, which is that correlation does not equal causation. You know, people can manipulate statistics to allegedly prove their viewpoint apart and devoid of the truth.
Right.
And there's a few examples in this. For those interested in that, I recommend the book How to Lie with Statistics, which dives much deeper into this area. But the core message here is that incentives are a determining factor in human behavior. And in one segment, they put this to the test by taking a closer look at rampant cheating, you know, in sumo wrestling.
Yeah.
And the grades thing, like you mentioned. Ultimately, though, I think this is just intellectual masturbation, often raising questions on subjects that it just seems arbitrary. And some of the theories feel a little bit more like they're throwing darts at a wall and seeing if the numbers embrace their viewpoint than them really actually trying to understand causality. I don't really think they even ever really showed causality in much of this. It's just like, here's a theory I pulled out from thin air, and let's see if the numbers, you know, match it. You mentioned the segment on crime. I thought that was actually the most thought-provoking, more than the real estate thing, and their hypothesis that the decline of crime has less to do with being tough on crime and more to do with as a result of the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision on abortion was, I think, pretty compelling, and there were a lot of statistics to back that up, and I think that was really interesting and is at least, at the very least, sure to spark some good discussion.
Yeah.
But other areas I don't think are explored enough. And instead, they just come across as intellectuals telling us their theories, and we just kind of have to take their word for it. The theme of how we know what we know and the role of incentives used to describe human behavior is compelling, but the movie falls short. The main authors of the book, who are interviewed and narrate much of the movie, don't seem to take it all very seriously either. And they come across as a couple of know-it-alls that, in the end, just leaves the audience with a sense of not really being able to know much about anything. And so on that point, I think it's kind of insulting to the audience. Now, this isn't as wicked as, say, Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, which is an all-out assault on human achievement. And I hope they don't make a documentary based on that piece of trash. But this is kind of in the same category. I'm going to give it a C because the abortion theory segment was so compelling. But this is at best a rental.
Yeah, yeah. At the most, I would not see this in the theaters. And I think the first segment about the way you name your children, it was just a complete waste. It was a waste of celluloid or digit pixels or whatever, however they shot this thing. and the sumo wrestling thing was interesting. If it was a documentary about sumo wrestling, I don't know. You're right. I mean, none of it really went together all that well. And it almost felt like a really extended version of something that you'd see on, say, The Daily Show or something like that. That, you know, this kind of goofy, tongue-in-cheek sort of approach to some kind of interesting intellectual ideas. Because if it really is about, if you understand what's an incentive for somebody, if you understand what makes them tick, you can predict their behavior and possibly improve their lives and help them learn or lower crime or, you know, make society a more civil place.
Yeah.
I think that could be a very powerful, at least psychological field. But
yes. So, you know, some of the solutions they propose in this also, I think, don't even address their own logic. Like with regard to rampant cheating and whatnot, they talk about needing to protect whistleblowers and basically incentivize whistleblowing, which, like, if you incentivize whistleblowing, then you're going to have a whole bunch of basically fake whistleblowers out there who want to do that just for the fame. And they don't even talk about that or think about that much, which I think is a real miss.
Yeah. And then they go on this whole, there's a whole detour with the Japanese police investigation system. And it's one of those kind of weird things as you're watching. And it's slickly made. It's very well made. I can't fault the filmmaking per se, but it's just one of those kind of things when you're watching, it's like, all right, this isn't that bad. The more you think about it, the less it's not really less than the sum of its parts. So I'm with you on this. If you want to see it, rent it, maybe read the book. Maybe the book is deeper. I don't know. So.
Well, that wraps the show for this week. Mr. Film gave The Social Network an A-, and I gave it a B+.
And Mr. Movie gave Freakonomics a C, and I gave it a B-, and we both recommend that you wait for it to become available as a rental. Tune into our next show, where we'll be reviewing Secretariat and Life as We Know It, and the documentary Waiting for Superman.
All right. We've had a lot of documentaries lately. I think it's because this is Academy Award qualifying season, which is just about over. So we'll be taking a break from documentaries for a while, thankfully.
Not if they're good. I mean, if there are a lot of more good ones coming out, I hope there are. We'll go see them.
All right, fair enough. As always, visit our website at www.moviefilmshow.com. Be sure to email us at mail@moviefilmshow.com and get in your vote for who had the most obscure movie, me, Mr. Movie, or Mr. Film. And as always, subscribe to us in iTunes. Tell your friends to just search for The Movie Film Show, and you can find us that way. All right, that's it for the show this week. Mr. Film, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you, Mr. Movie. Or at least that's the theory of our next picture.
Oh, you want a trailer of that? Is that what you
want? No, if we don't have it. Okay.
I got it.
At least that's the theory.
I got a trailer.
Okay. Hello, welcome to the Movie Film Show.
No.
What? What did I do wrong?
You're not supposed to say welcome to the movie.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Hello, I'm Mr. Bill.
And I'm Mr. Foovy.
And for